You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Stephen Ellis. Stephen, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
So, Stephen, you're in New York now, and well, that's where we're talking from. Can you tell me a little bit about what's happening in your studio or what's going on at the moment? If you're working on something in particular.
At the moment, I'm trying to develop an idea that began on a pair of very large wall paintings that I made in France a couple of years ago. It turned out to be a more complicated experience than I expected. I mean, the paintings were very large but very simple, and so I've been trying to find a way to get to that same place in the easel paintings that I'm making in my studio, and finding
well,
it
a
better.
Let's talk a little bit about. Could you tell me? Sorry to interrupt. But could you tell me then what those, how those wall paintings in France were executed? I mean, were they frescoes, and how are they built? Can you explain a little bit more about those, and then maybe that'll help us segue into what's happening now?
Yeah, it was an unusual situation. There's a foundation called Non-Objective Sud that's run by Carol Vail and Andrew Huston, and they have an 18th century farmhouse north of Avignon. Attached to the farmhouse is a very large old stone barn. And so these paintings were at either end of a 90 by 25 foot barn loft, which had been converted into a gallery. So the paintings themselves were painted in house paint on plaster walls at either end of this big space. But the space itself is dominated by an incredibly beautiful and dramatic beamed ceiling. The beams are like, you know, hewn roughly out of giant trees. And so when I got there, I had this idea that I was going to do something kind of complex on these walls, and then I realized that there was no competing with the architecture itself. But also the walls were very rough stone.
Right.
So then I ended up doing this very simple thing, and I was just very happy with the way that it transformed the space of the room. I mean, not just physically, but mentally. And, but it's one thing that was just a feature of the actual physical size of these paintings, but I was trying to figure out what part of that is translatable into smaller work.
What is translatable? I'm glad you mentioned that, because that seems like such an incredible counterpoint to New York. You're in New York, working in New York, and that like stone barn that's, you know, kind of ancient sounds incredible, you know, and
it's really amazing. And they had a party at the end of this, at the end of the project. My partner Allison Vieira did a sculpture down on the ground floor, and so when they had the opening for this, they had a big party in that room, and it was one of the most unique and exciting painting experiences I've had, was having these, you know, giant paintings in either end of this room where there was this very, fun and lively social event going on. I haven't had that opportunity before. It's sort of like a medieval, you know, reception hall or something.
Hmm. And so how will you interpret that? I mean, that's a pretty interesting task now. So how are you exploring that in your studio, as you were saying at the beginning?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't pre-plan my paintings. I just people have sometimes described it as looking very irrational, but in fact the process is completely intuitive, and I just start in and see what happens. And so I really, and I've been, you know, sort of plugging away at this problem for a while, but very often I find that the problem is solved by getting everything wrong first until you finally end up with nothing left but the thing you actually want. And so I'm somewhere in the middle of that process at the moment. They veer off into architectural representation, sometimes into landscape images, neither of which is what I want at all, but I just have to follow the path, you know, down to these various cul-de-sacs until I can get out again.
Well, you're in the process of getting everything wrong, as you're saying.
Yeah, well, exactly. I have to get everything wrong before I can get it right.
Hmm.
The thing about painting for me is that it's not, you know, it's not like an illustration of an idea or a description of an idea. It is an idea. And I can't really know what that idea is until I just find a way to make it.
Right, and I mean, if we can talk about size, is this how are you thinking about size in this way?
I'm working at various sizes, ranging from about 8 feet in the largest dimension at the big end down to very quite small paintings that are, you know, maybe 20 by 30 or something like 10 by 25, something like that. I sometimes find it easier that there's a kind of correlation between a very small painting and a very large painting, because a small painting kind of looks like what you see when you look at a large painting from far away, whereas the middle sizes are more like the body, or, you know, it's like an arm stretch or something like that, and has a very different psychological effect.
Right.
But I'm also thinking about what, you know, the this is a bit hard to verbalize, but my paintings in the past have had a lot to do with film or video or you know, the visuality of those mediums and how fugitive media feel if you render them into a stable image like a painting.
Mm.
And with ideas of time, how you could, you know, describe time in a painting. I really love the old seeing these paintings where things that are happening longer ago are happening farther away in space. So as you approach the picture plane, you're coming into the present. But there are all these different ways of evoking time in painting without actually having any real duration.
Maybe an example of when you evoke that, especially when you talk about like cinema and the imagery there, you know, influencing, you know, older work. What was a time where you felt, you know, and I know it is tough to verbalize all of these things because we're talking about visual imagery, but a time when, or a work in the past where those things came together, as you're saying, something about, you know, being interested in the image of cinema, but also where that kind of sense of time was communicated in a past work.
Well, it was communicated in a kind of grid pattern that I associated with, you know, actual time in music. Or, you know, I mean, I actually started out thinking about film. I mean, thinking about music, and then when I put it into visual form, it looked like film. And then that began to elicit a bunch of images in my mind because I really love film, and things that I had seen just started to come out in the paintings. But it was done, you know, it's as if you set up a pulse, like a rhythmic pulse, and so that gives you a sense of time. If you're, you know, I mean, because you can read a painting like you can read a text from right to left or left to right in rows or vertical columns, and that's a certain sense of time. But I mean, all you need really to get a feeling of time is repetition. So I just started with repetition, and that was the main vehicle for that kind of idea in my older paintings. But now I'm actually not. I mean, I'm interested in that. You know, I still find it an interesting idea, but I'm not really interested in making paintings in that way at the moment. I'm trying to find a way that I guess has more to do with time as indicated by gesture. You know, how the act of making the stroke is another way of recording time. You know, the sequence of surfaces or whether the stroke is fast or slow, all that kind of thing. But you know, I mean, that's just one way of talking about it. Like I say, if I really knew the answer to the question, I wouldn't really need to make the paintings.
Right. Well, that's true. It's it's always kind of
I was looking at Philip Guston's paintings from the 60s at Hauser and Viet the other day, the show that's up now.
Right.
And these are the paintings that are these black, you know, matrices of black strokes in the middle of gray fields. And I was really—I remember that I loved those paintings in the '60s when I saw them. I was in my late teens, I guess, and I had kind of forgotten about them because the 70s work, the more figurative work, was so powerful that I haven't, and they haven't been shown very much until now. And then seeing them again, I was surprised at how much I still love them, and yet I find them very hard to describe. I think maybe the paintings that I love best are the ones that are hardest to explain why why they're so interesting. Like, why is a Chardin still life so interesting, you know?
That's true, yeah. There's kind of a quality that's really hard to pin down. I mean, you know, you just talking about that made me think about Ed Reinhardt and how, you know, especially a while ago, I was enormously influenced by Ed Reinhardt and what is happening there and what's going on with, his work and why is one of them more successful than another and in which way. And it would be pretty tough to talk to him on the radio, too.
Right. I recently ran across a great quote from Oscar Wilde who said, there are two ways to dislike art. One is simply to dislike it, and the other is to like it for good reasons.
That was when he was an art critic for a little while. That's great.
Yeah, well, he was certainly the maker of many great epigrams. I just take that to be about, you know, the art that interests me the most the painting that interests me the most, the visual art, is the visual art I have the hardest time talking about or justifying in some way.
Yeah,
it's the most difficult
to talk about. And so what's coming up next? Are these going to be in a show next? Is there a particular exhibition?
Well, that's really
being put together for?
What comes up next depends on the paintings, actually. I mean, I'll do a show at some point with my dealer in LA. That's probably the first thing coming up, but I want to see what the paintings become before I decide on the nature of the show. I'm not sure whether I want to do another installation with paintings that somehow participate in the installation or just paintings that have some of the same ideas that I've developed out of that French painting in France. I just don't know yet. And so until I really know, I don't want to put the paintings out before I really know what they are. So I'm
right.
kind of taking my time and just working it, you know. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, as my father used to say.
Right. Well, and you don't have a kind of gallery or a gallerist demanding that a show or requesting a show sooner.
Well, you know, they may request, but I can't work any faster than I can. It's just going to happen when it happens.
Right.
I hope that's sooner rather than later, but that's all I know about it at the moment.
Right, it's hard to tell. In you know, it's good talking about work and as it is to talk about visual work on the air. In closing, I always ask people about a book that they're reading. Is there a book that you're reading now that you might want to share with us? Could be off topic, doesn't have to be related to art, but anything at all.
Well, actually, I'm one of those people that reads a lot of things at the same time, but something that probably is related is an art historian named Alois Riegel, who was one of the first people to start developing terms that would help appreciate arts other than Western art. Did you ever run across George Kubler's The Shape of Time?
No, I didn't.
Well, there's a series of art historians that came out of Riegel. One is Wilhelm Voringer, who wrote Abstraction and Empathy. Another is Henri Faucillon, who actually taught at Yale and wrote, among other things, The Life of Forms in Art. But it's just a group of art historians who not only do I find the way that they understand how visual art has meaning sympathetic, but also, I find that I start getting images from them. They massage my imaging faculty somehow, so I find them really useful to read when I'm painting, because it just seems to stir up my visual imagination.
I like that. I'm glad you mentioned those. Stephen, it's really been a pleasure talking to you today. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me and doing this difficult task of talking about visual work in a non-visual medium. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.